Please enjoy a clip from Cadman's Essential Lessing, copyright 1962 by Doris Lessing, production copyright 1984, 1989, and 1992 by HarperCollins Publishers. From The Golden Notebook, read by Doris Lessing.
Free Women. Anna meets her friend Molly in the summer of 1957 after a separation. The two women were alone in the London flat. "The point is," said Anna, as her friend came back from the telephone on the landing, "the point is that, as far as I can see, everything's cracking up." Molly was a woman much on the telephone. When it rang, she had just inquired, "Well, what's the gossip?" Now she said, "That's Richard, and he's coming over. It seems today's his only free moment for the next month, or so he insists." "Well, I'm not leaving," said Anna. "No, you stay just where you are." Molly considered her own appearance. She was wearing trousers and a sweater, both the worse for wear. "You'll have to take me as I come," she concluded, and sat down by the window. "He wouldn't say what it's about. Another crisis with Marion, I suppose." "Didn't he write to you?" asked Anna, cautious. "Both he and Marion wrote ever such Bonhomme's letters. Odd, isn't it?" This "odd, isn't it?" was the characteristic note of the intimate conversations they designated gossip. But having struck the note, Molly swerved off with, "It's no use talking now because he's coming right over, he says." "He'll probably go when he sees me here," said Anna cheerfully, but slightly aggressive. Molly glanced at her keenly and said, "Oh, but why?" It had always been understood that Anna and Richard disliked each other, and before, Anna had always left when Richard was expected. Now Molly said, "Actually, I think he rather likes you in his heart of hearts. The point is, he's committed to liking me, on principle. He's such a fool, he's always got to either like or dislike someone. So all the dislike he won't admit he has for me gets pushed off onto you." "It's a pleasure," said Anna. "But do you know something? I discovered while you were away that for a lot of people, you and I are practically interchangeable." "You've only just understood that," said Molly, triumphant as always when Anna came up with, as far as she was concerned, facts that were self-evident. In this relationship, a balance had been struck early on. Molly was altogether more worldly wise than Anna, who, for her part, had a superiority of talent. Anna held her own private views. Now she smiled, admitting that she'd been very slow. "When we're so different in every way," said Molly, "it's odd. I suppose because we both live the same kind of life. Not getting married and so on, that's all they see." "Free women," said Anna, wryly. She added, with an anger new to Molly, so that she earned another quick scrutinizing glance from her friend, "They still define us in terms of relationships with men, even the best of them." "Well, we do, don't we?" said Molly, rather tart. "Well, it's awfully hard not to," she amended hastily, because of the look of surprise Anna now gave her. There was a short pause, during which the women did not look at each other, but reflected that a year apart was a long time, even for an old friendship. Molly said at last, sighing, "Free. Do you know, when I was away, I was thinking about us, and I've decided that we're a completely new type of woman. We must be, surely." "There's nothing new under the sun," said Anna, in an attempt at a German accent. Molly, irritated, she spoke half a dozen languages well, said, "There's nothing new under the sun," in a perfect reproduction of a shrewd old woman's voice, German accented. Anna grimaced, acknowledging failure. She could not learn languages and was too self-conscious ever to become somebody else. For a moment, Molly had even looked like Mother Sugar, otherwise Mrs. Marx, to whom both had gone for psychoanalysis. The reservations both had felt about the solemn and painful ritual were expressed by the pet name Mother Sugar, which, as time passed, became a name for much more than a person and indicated a whole way of looking at life, traditional, rooted, conservative, in spite of its scandalous familiarity with everything amoral. In spite of, that was how Anna and Molly, discussing the ritual, had felt it. Recently, Anna had been feeling more and more it was because of, and this was one of the things she was looking forward to discussing with her friend. But now Molly, reacting as she had often done in the past, To the slightest suggestion of a criticism from Anna of Mother Sugar, said quickly, "All the same, she was wonderful, and I was in much too bad a shape to criticize." Mother Sugar used to say, "You're Electra, or you're Antigone," and that was the end as far as she was concerned, said Anna. "Well, not quite the end," said Molly, wryly insisting on the painful probing hours both had spent. "Yes," said Anna, unexpectedly insisting, so that Molly, for the third time, looked at her curiously. "Yes. Oh, I'm not saying she didn't do me all the good in the world. I'm sure I'd never have coped with what I'd had to cope with without her. But all the same, I remember quite clearly one afternoon sitting there, the big room, the discreet wall lights, and the Buddha and the pictures and the statues." "Well," said Molly, now very critical. Anna, in the face of this unspoken but clear determination not to discuss it, said, "I've been thinking about it all during the last few months. No, I want to talk about it with you. After all, we both went through it and were the same person." "Well?" Anna persisted. "I remember that afternoon, knowing I'd never go back. It was all that damned art all over the place." Molly drew in her breath, sharp. She said quickly, "I don't know what you mean." As Anna did not reply, she said, accusing, "And have you written anything since I've been away?" "No." "I keep telling you," said Molly, her voice shrill, "I'll never forgive you if you throw that talent away, and I mean it. I've done it. I can't stand watching you. I've messed with painting and dancing and acting and scribbling, and now... You're so talented, Anna. Why? I simply don't understand." "How can I ever say why when you're always so bitter and accusing?" Molly even had tears in her eyes, which were fastened in the most painful reproach on her friend. She brought out, with difficulty, "At the back of my mind I always thought, well, I'll get married, so it doesn't matter wasting all the talents I was born with. Until recently I was even dreaming about having more children. Yes, I know it's idiotic, but it's true. And now I'm 40, and Tommy's grown up. But the point is, if you're not writing simply because you're thinking about getting married..." "But we both want to get married," said Anna, making it humorous. The tone restored reserve to the conversation. She had understood, with pain, that she was not, after all, going to be able to discuss certain subjects with Molly. Molly smiled, dry, but gave her friend an acute, bitter look, and said, "All right, but you'll be sorry later." "Sorry," said Anna, laughing out of surprise. "Molly, why is it you'll never believe other people have the disabilities you have? You were lucky enough to be given one talent and not four. Perhaps my one talent has had as much pressure on it as your four. I can't talk to you in this mood. Shall I make you some tea while we're waiting for Richard? I'd rather have beer or something," she added, provocative. "I've been thinking I might very well take to drink later on." Molly said, in the older sister's tone Anna had invited, "You shouldn't make jokes, Anna. Not when you see what it does to people. Look at Marion. I wonder if she's been drinking while I was away." "I can tell you she has, yes. She came to see me several times." "She came to see you?" "That's what I was leading up to when I said you and I seem to be interchangeable." Molly tended to be possessive. She showed resentment, as Anna had known she would, as she said, "I suppose you're going to say Richard came to see you too." Anna nodded, and Molly said briskly, "I'll get us some beer." She returned from the kitchen with two long, cold beaded glasses and said, "Well, you'd better tell me all about it before Richard comes, hadn't you?" Richard was Molly's husband, or rather he had been her husband. Molly was a product of what she referred to as one of those 20s marriages. Her mother and father had both glittered, but briefly, in the intellectual and bohemian circles that had spun around the great central lights of Huxley, Lawrence, Joyce, etc. Her childhood had been disastrous, since this marriage only lasted a few months. She had married, at the age of 18, the son of a friend of her father's. She knew now she had married out of a need for security and even respectability. The boy Tommy was a product of this marriage. Richard, at 20, had already been on the way to becoming the very solid businessman he had since proved himself. And Molly and he had stood their incompatibility for not much more than a year. He had then married Marion, and there were three boys. Tommy had remained with Molly. Richard and she, once the business of the divorce was over, became friends again. Later, Marion became her friend. This, then, was a situation to which Molly often referred to as, It's all very odd, isn't it?
We hope you've enjoyed this program from Cadman. For more information about the broad range of titles from Harper Audio, Harper Children's Audio, and Cadman, please visit our website at www.harperaudio.com. Thank you for listening.